Wednesday afternoon, time for our bi-monthly conversation with MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez. A number of Michigan communities are dealing with PFAS, groundwater contaminated with the chemical PFAS. Most people know it to be Scotchgard. You, your staff, are taking a deep dive into what it's going to take to clean up PFAS.
It's going to take a long time, and it's going to take a lot of money to put a very complex issue in short order, as Matt Greisen, who's writing these stories for us in this week's edition and the next two editions of MIBiz, as we take a deep dive look into this issue. You know, it says it straight up in the beginning of the story, buckle up for a long, long ride on this roller coaster, folks. This is going to take a long time and a bunch of money to clean up. We have any number of these contaminated sites that have become apparent in the last few years. Obviously, here in the Grand Rapids area, the Wolverine issue up on the north end of town. And it's coming to light. There are things occurring. And the point of the story we have this week in MIBiz is, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, depending on how you want to look at this and what perspective you take, we've got a bit of a playbook on how to go about this. Anybody who grew up in Michigan, if you're old enough, you remember those three letters from the 1970s, PBB. This occurred when a fire retardant was mixed with animal feed accidentally, and it caused a big contamination there back in the mid-1970s. Several thousand farmers had to put down several thousand of their cows and their chickens, and it's an issue that lingered for many years. The other example he cites in this story is the Kalamazoo River Superfund site that's got PCB contamination from the paper mills back in the early part of the prior century. And that came to light in the late 70s. And that Superfund site is now 3+ decades. And we talked to somebody from the EPA, or Matt did, and it could be another 15 to 20 years before that Superfund site is done. And that's all cleaned up in the Kalamazoo River, which is roughly an 80-mile stretch from Portage all the way to Lake Michigan. So this is going to take a long time to address, and there are things going on, but it's going to be many, many years, and it's going to be a lot of money spent.
It would seem that it's going to be even more complicated with the idea that this is groundwater. I mean, we talk about rivers, and often that's a sediment issue, right? So you can kind of go in and scrape off layers of a river bottom or along the banks. Groundwater is a whole nother issue.
Yeah, to get in there and to first just to identify the exact scope of a contaminated site and how wide. And the data says, and reading up on this and learning about this, is that this is a chemical that spreads quickly. And it gets through the water quickly and into the soil and the surface and groundwater. So that's the first attack, is just identifying these sites and the scope of the problem. And then you have to come up with this remediation plan and how to attack it. And, oh, by the way, there are folks relying on that surface water or groundwater for their daily drinking water, for their cooking, for their household use. What do you do there? So, you know, we've seen issues where around the Wolverine sites where folks have been provided water. Of course, Flint is an issue that's occurring and going on for a completely separate reason, but there are folks there that are still using some of that bottled water. Where will this go, and how deep is the problem? That's something that's still coming to light. Everybody we talk to for these stories says it's going to take a long time to really get this thing tackled.
And you also talk with political leadership.
Sidney Smith had some conversations with Representative Dale Kildee over in Flint and Senator Gary Peters from Michigan. And one of the things they point out is this is obviously not a partisan issue. This is bipartisan. Everybody wants this addressed. There's some things that they are trying to get done. One of the things is they were able to address a Federal Aviation Administration mandate that until last year forced government and commercial airports to use firefighting foams that contain this chemical. So they broke that mandate. They've championed other provisions. There's other legislation that's been introduced about identifying the problems in other areas. Up at the Worth Smith Air Force Base, the former Air Force Base near Oscoda, they were able to secure some $10 million in funding for a national study on the effects of these chemicals on veterans and their families in the communities near that former military base and other military bases. This is in the 2018 Defense Department appropriation. Take a look at what's been the effect on the folks who were stationed at these bases where this chemical has contaminated the area. How deep is the problem? What's been the effects on the folks who are stationed there and their families? There's some action going on. Another one is there's legislation to authorize the U.S. Geological Survey to search for PFAS contamination in water and soil and air around the country. So it's not going overlooked, certainly. There is action on many fronts. And again, One of the points we point out in this week's edition and some of these stories is, unfortunately, there is somewhat of a playbook on how to handle these large contamination issues, and folks are going about it.
Michigan is very proud of its craft beer industry, and it takes good water to make that happen. You have a story here about a brewer's charitable donation that is facing Michigan Liquor Control Commission scrutiny.
I guess you could put this under the file of no good deed goes unpunished, perhaps. In the example we cite is a Sierra Nevada Brewing Company out in California when they had the fires in Northern California last year. Kind of wanted to do a brew that could raise money to help that restoration and effort out there and kind of put out the word to other craft brewers. And it's a very collegial industry in many respects, but put out the word to other breweries, hey, here's the recipe. If you want to brew this, please do it. And a lot of those craft brewers around the nation then said, okay, the profits we make on this, we'll send to this fund out in California to help out this campfire relief fund and folks who are affected by these devastating fires. There's a bit of a problem with that, which is here in Michigan, the Liquor Control Commission kind of put out a notice that said at issue is really the state liquor control code that says a licensee shall not allow a person whose name does not appear on the license to use or benefit from that license. So there's a bit of a rub there. Now, obviously, the LCC, they're not looking to bust people for trying to do something charitable, but how do you get adherence to the law, to the regulation? So there's a bit of an issue there. Basically, what the Liquor Control Commission is saying is if all the sales and profits accrue to the license holder, then a donation is made later by the license holder, that would be okay. So collect the money, then write the check instead of sending that money directly to the fund. It's kind of a real kind of splitting hairs type thing, but it's one of those issues we see come up from time to time is how do you maintain the integrity of regulation that's probably there for a good reason, but still allow somebody to do something in this case is a pretty good thing to help people out.
MIBiz senior writer Mark Sanchez, thank you so much.
We'll talk to you again.